Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Megan.
We're two moms with 8 kids between us, from little to grown.
We're in different areas of the country and in different stages of life.
But we both know that motherhood's a lot easier when real moms share tips and encouragement.
And remind you that it's really all going to be okay.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 184 of the Mom Hour. I'm Sarah Powers, here as always with Megan Francis. Hey, Megan.
Hey, Sarah.
So first of all, can we talk about the response to last week's episode? I don't usually start the show that way because it's like...
It feels a little self-serving,
well,
right?
Yeah, but we heard from a lot of you. So if you listened last week, we talked about this kind of idea that mommy needs a drink at the end of the day and all of the memes and cultural implications of that. And anytime we do a sensitive topic, you and I are a little nervous, right, Megan? We're like,
right, yes.
Yeah. Don't know what the response will be.
But it was so positive.
It was. And
not everybody like agreed with us. Well, we didn't even really take a stand, honestly. But like, you know what I mean? Like some people had a slightly different perspective or whatever. But I felt like overall it was just very supportive and
Yes.
Our people are.
You guys are the best. So thank you to everyone who sent in emails and commented on social media. And if you haven't listened to last week's episode, it's called Mommy Needs Wine and Other Problematic Mom Tropes. And it definitely struck a chord, hit a nerve, those things.
I want to also throw in there that we made a recommendation to read Aidan Donnelly Rowley's blog.
Mm-hmm.
And I had kind of, I think I read 2 or 3 of her posts a few years ago, but I haven't really paid very close attention. And I went back one day and just read like probably 12 of her blog posts around like probably from 2012 to 2014. And they're so good.
Yeah.
It's such good reading, even if, you know, this isn't something you think about that often or whatever.
Yeah.
It was really, really well done. And it really kind of could be about any, like her whole point is like everybody has their thing.
Yep.
And, you know, figuring out what yours is part of, I guess, growing into motherhood and figuring this all, being a grown up, adulting.
Oh, man. Yeah. Do we have to?
Right? We do.
So today's topic is fun. You recently celebrated a motherhood milestone. Will you tell us how long you've been a mom?
I have been a mom for 21 years and some change now.
So your motherhood, which also means you've been a mom
My motherhood can drink legally.
I don't even know what to do with that. Like the entity that is you as a mom is now of legal drinking age. But also it's almost half your life. I thought about that too. I think I like numbers.
It's more than half my life, isn't it?
Oh yeah. Yeah. So you will be 42 this year. So you're coming to that point where, I guess that's been for
it's starting
a
to outpace.
While.
Yes. It's outpacing
yes,
me.
More than half your life. You have been a mom. So what we're talking about today is kind of a variety of things, but we're going to go back in time and talk a little bit about things that have changed since we became a mom. Cause you've just had this 21 year milestone. I'm going on 10 and a half. And then kind of at the last minute, I called up my mom and had her share some things about things that have changed since she became a mom, which spoiler alert was almost 39 years ago. I don't know what that's a spoiler for, that I'm 39 almost.
Because everyone's like on the edge of their seat. And now that they know, it's ruined.
I've never ruined. I've never been secretive about my age. It just feels so like, I don't know. Put an exact number on it. So that was kind of fun too. So you and I are going to chat about this. And then toward the end of the episode, we're going to weave in some of my mom's thoughts on, because I think any amount of
so fun
hindsight and perspective, I think that's what we give to a lot of our new mom listeners. And then to get it an entire generation beyond that was kind of cool.
Yeah, I totally agree.
All right. Yeah. Should we kick off with a sponsor conversation? And I have to ask you.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So how's your holiday shopping going?
Okay. So last time you asked me that, it was nothing.
Uh-huh.
I hadn't done a thing. But now I have gotten started. I have an outline. Like I have a spreadsheet.
Yes.
But there are a few people that I'm very stumped.
Okay.
Some people.
Well, I've got an idea for you from one of our sponsors. Okay. So for a really special gift for almost anyone on your list, you have to check out Canvas People. They print your favorite photos on Canvas and turn them into really unique works of art that add a beautiful touch to your home. My plan for Canvas People this year is I'm actually going to upload a scan of one of Allegra's beautiful pastel drawings that she did in art class and gift her own artwork on Canvas, which she is just going to think is like the best thing ever.
That is such a good idea. And honestly, that would work. Like some of Clara's drawings and even the boys, who don't consider themselves artists are really good. And I could see that also working as like decor for around the house.
Right, exactly.
These prints really are like pieces of art and they look beautiful. You can prop them easily up if hanging isn't your thing.
Hanging challenge.
Properly. Yes, they prop really easily. They're gorgeous and they really are pieces of art.
Okay, well, guys, we have a really, really good deal for you. This is like one where you just do this deal. Just do it, as we like to say. So it's a really limited time holiday offer. CanvasPeople.com is going to give you their 11 by 14 photo canvas for free. That is right, free. They normally sell for $69.99, but right now you'll pay nothing. You just cover shipping and handling. So to get your free canvas, I know it is totally. So to get your free canvas, text mom hour to 484848. You can do it on your phone right now. You'll just pay shipping and handling and this offer will not last. So we're excited to be working with them for the holidays, but it's going to go away. And again, you're going to text mom hour to 484848 and message and data rates may apply.
All right. Well, you know what? They didn't have canvas people when I became a mom.
You know what you couldn't do when you became a mom is text 484848 and you get a free photo canvas.
Nothing would happen. Yeah. You also couldn't, like, if you did happen to have a phone with a camera on it. No, those didn't exist. Sorry.
Yeah. Maybe. I mean,
those would never have blown up into a canvas.
Okay. So yeah. for perspective, you had Jacob in late 98, correct?
No, 97.
97. Do you see? I just wrote 98 in this outline. Like
you did. I wondered why that was there, but no, that would be 20 years ago.
Right. I can do math. I'm good at math.
You can.
So take us back to 1997. Do you remember some of the trends either for baby stuff or even for yourself? Like every music, like what do you remember? Is that too broad a question?
Oh, that's a very broad question. So here was what was interesting. And this is really not as much to do with what was happening in the world. But like I went from being a sophomore in college to moving and like setting up, like getting married and setting up housekeeping in a city 8 hours from where any of my friends lived. So I my life so drastically changed that year that I almost feel like I completely checked out. Like I have no idea what the trends were.
Right.
I'm sure Adam Sandler was still making movies. The music was sort of that late 90s pop.
Yep. Well, Britney started I feel like that was like a year later, maybe a little Britney Spears and NSYNC and stuff.
NSYNC and stuff. That stuff started really getting big like a year later. But I feel like 97 was a weird year for a lot of stuff. But I missed it. I have no idea. As far as baby trends, though, you know, I was actively.
This was a new world for you.
Yeah. This was a new world. So I immersed myself hardcore. I would say this was like a time of many large and clunky baby objects.
Okay.
And what's really funny to me is to think back to like what my mom would say, like, you guys have so much stuff that we never had. And it was a time of stuff. Like I remember going into Baby Depot, I think was one of that was like a furniture depot offshoot. Okay. And then Babies R Us, which I think is still around.
I think it's folding as we speak. It is.
Really?
Yes, I believe so. Listeners, you can correct us if we're wrong, but I'm pretty sure Toys R Us and Babies R Us, I think they're going.
Oh, I forgot that they're from the same.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they're going bye-bye. And Bye Bye Baby is owned by Bed Bath & Beyond, right? And they're, I think, going strong.
I don't believe Bye Bye Baby existed yet. Or if it did, it was like city.
Yeah.
People went there. I did not have that. That would have been way too fancy for me. I didn't have like stores like Land of Nod and like those really cool. Like I didn't have access to those. I think there was probably Pottery Barn Kids. But
it was like a catalog. That's what it would have just been a catalog for me. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was very firmly in the world of like Graco and Costco, I think is that other brand. Mm-hmm. They're sort of mid-range, like, you know, like regular people stuff. Everything was systems. Like it was, you know, you didn't just have a stroller. All of a sudden you had a stroller system. You didn't just have a baby swing. It did other stuff. So they were starting to kind of toy with that, but everything still looked ugly.
Yeah.
Really, really ugly.
Did you think it was ugly at the time or did it look?
No, it just looked the way it looked. It looked like baby crap. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like baby stuff looked like it was made for babies.
Like there was no expectation that it would be stylish for you.
No.
Yes. Got it. Okay.
In fact, I do remember when I picked out our stroller system that we got for Jacob that I went to the store. And they had like your typical primary colors, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they had one that was purple and teal. That was so very big.
Yes.
But there were two that had just been introduced. One was like a sage green and gray, and one was navy blue and white. And the prints were still kind of vaguely babyish and not like cool, like nothing I really wanted, but they were so much better than the other two that I remember being like, oh, okay, like this isn't so bad. And that I ended up getting, registering in for and getting the navy blue with like little Swiss dots, as I recall. It wasn't awful, but like I knew that it was preferable to the other stuff, but like it didn't really, if someone had gotten me the other one, I would have been like, oh, okay.
Right.
Like I just didn't care that much. Because I got plenty of hand-me-downs that were all very like early 90s and late 80s ugly.
Yeah.
I didn't care. It was an object. It was a device. It wasn't supposed to be an extension of my fashion.
And we will get into this later, but because you were not expected to have like a style spread of your home in every Instagram picture because there was no Instagram, but we will get into that. Yeah, well, exactly. I was just going to say that, so I became a mom in spring of 2008. So I got pregnant in 2007. So just a little over 10 years later than you. I do think that a lot of the gear was starting to be in prints that were more marketed toward moms. I do remember like, and again, it wasn't, we weren't in the Instagram land yet, but I do remember thinking that the pattern of my pack and play, high chair, swing, of course, they all matched each other and I thought they all had to match. But I remember thinking it was really pretty. So that is maybe an evolution. I did go to Babies R Us. I think Bye Bye Baby was around, but I didn't have it. So we'll have to look into that. But it's just interesting. So 10 years later, I remember really liking the color of the Chico car seat and stroller. It was a red, but like my favorite, like cherry red. So I definitely remember thinking this was like kind of a style choice for me. Nothing compared to what it is now. I mean, now the stuff would look clunky and ugly to me. But that's why I asked if you thought... But you were saying like you didn't think here nor there.
It didn't occur to me.
Whereas I do feel like I made those choices in the same way I'd pick out, you know, curtains for my house or something. Like it felt like a fun, it did feel like a stylish choice, even though looking back, I mean, they're not that stylish now, but the, And then I was going to ask, because you were so technology forward, do you remember like what would have been the kind of hot new technology or mode of communication that was just emerging for you? Because I think this is
well
applies to everybody.
I was technology forward in some ways, but I've never been a big gadget person. John always was very technology forward when it came to like communications. We always had good computers. We always had phones.
And like, I had internet. You had internet like before most people.
Yes, I had internet in 97 and I had a cell phone in 97. Well, try to remember if we both had cell phones. I know he had to have one for work. And I think somehow we were able to get a second one, but we could only like call each other on it or something. I don't remember, but we had very early cell phones. We had pretty decent internet. We had the best possible internet within reason was for any time we had. So I was online in 97. And I had a phone. I didn't text people.
Right.
That wasn't what I used a cell phone for. And it was actually a Nextel. So we could like bloop, bloop to each other.
Oh,
but like,
okay.
Yeah. Remember those? Because he worked in utility. So like there was, and that was all the dudes were always meep, meep, being each other, but we didn't text. I don't remember getting really into technology, but I will say, I think the things that were becoming big then were, things that made music, things that played,
you know,
terrible, annoying music had been kind of coming up, but I feel like it was starting to spread into other things like bouncy seats and stuff. And I think that monitor technology was getting a lot better.
Oh, baby monitors? So, okay.
Yeah, I think they were becoming wireless or cordless, I mean. And I think maybe the very early preliminary video monitors were becoming more available. But I mean, I lived in a teeny apartment. It didn't even occur to me.
Can I tell you something? I mean, I had babies in 2008, 2010, and 2013. So well after you, and I never had a baby monitor, A, that worked consistently or that held a charge or that could be unplugged. And the only video one I ever had was something you and I did with a sponsor. So I got it as part of a campaign. And when it worked, it was good, but it had to be rebooted like you have to reboot your modem.
Yeah.
Like I honestly... I hope they've gotten better for you people, but they're expensive and they were finicky. So like, I feel like I might as well have had a 1994 baby monitor for my entire time of having babies through 2014.
Yeah. I don't think any of them were ever, they can be very creepy too. Like, you ever sat at someone's house and listened to the baby monitor and like all the sounds it picks up? It's quite, I don't know. There's something a little bit disturbing about it, but also because of the way I'd parented babies, like, typically, when my babies were small enough that I was thinking about a monitor, they were close to me someplace.
Agreed.
That was just the way I did things. So it was sort of superfluous. And I know that we had one with Jacob, but I remember like someone gave it to us at the at the shower. But I was like, oh,
I really
do with this thing.
Yeah, I use mine very infrequently. The main time I used them was during naps when I had a 2-story house because it was I was far enough away. But at night we were just down the hall and I don't like sleeping with a baby monitor by my bed because it keeps me awake more than the baby. So yes. I would just rather.
You're so on high alert, like listening, like wondering what you're hearing. Yeah.
Agreed. That's so funny. Okay. Well, we digressed. How about some things that were not a thing? I mean, a lot of things weren't a thing, but things that weren't a thing 21 years ago that you think are important for new moms now in one way or the other.
Well, I mean, smartphones, just like I said, most people didn't even have cell phones. I don't remember being able to text with anybody until probably William was a baby. Like it wasn't a thing with Jacob or Isaac. Anything like kind of alternative, like cloth diapers or slings, you typically had to buy them in a specialty store or online. And there were like very few options. I want to say when Isaac was born, so that was 19 years ago, there were like 2 or 3 major sling companies.
Okay.
And now there, you know, then there was an explosion of them. Mm-hmm. That might have gone the other direction. Maybe there was a glut and now it's narrowed down. But I remember there was like, you could get the over the shoulder baby holder, which you could buy anywhere basically, but they were kind of god awful. They were like, they had the padded rails. And the big thing, they had the ring and then like the big piece of fabric that hangs down. And at least that's how they were. And they were in really tacky prints. And then there was the Maya wrap, which is like the kind of scaled down version of that. They were always in some kind of tribal print.
Okay.
And then there was like, and then they had the pouch and I always had the pouch. But anyway, maternity clothes were terrible. I remember crying in the dressing room when I was pregnant with Jacob and finally went to go buy maternity clothes at, I don't know, Sears or Penny's, wherever I could get them.
So like Target and Old Navy now have cute maternity sections. They not to mention like now there's these things like, you know, the subscription box maternity clothes, the cute boutiques, the not to mention leggings and long tank tops that you can wear for 2/3 of a pregnancy. So
I'm not even sure motherhood maternity was really... There was a Mimi maternity in the mall. It was way too expensive for me.
Yeah. A lot of those are very expensive.
Yeah. I bought like one special occasion dress there. Actually, it might have been my wedding dress now that I think about it. But I think there was a motherhood maternity, but even motherhood maternity clothes were ugly. Like it was just everything was made without thought for style. I think they were getting there. Like they were trying to make them a little bit more trendy. But they weren't flattering. You know, the idea that you could be pregnant and look cute in your clothing and have them fit you correctly and not just be this sort of oversized version of like baby clothes,
right?
Which sometimes what they looked like baby clothes.
Right.
They were bad. Nursing clothes were even worse. Like they had these odd slits that didn't, I mean, it was so obvious. Or like the boxy, you know how lots of times there's like the top that's like the layer over the top. Mm-hmm. Well, it looked, you could tell what it was. It was just bad. That changed a lot though between babies number 1 and 2 and then like 3 and 4. So by the time William came along, there was a maternity section at Target where they really had elevated. Motherhood had gotten a lot better. Motherhood maternity, other things had popped up. So I think there was just more options. Baby gear, like I was saying, still looked like it was designed for babies to look at, you know, like instead of being an extension of mom and dad style. Blogs were not a thing. So all of my pregnancy, birth, and baby information came from books, magazines, and websites, and there weren't that many. And everybody in those websites interacted anonymously.
Okay.
Which is very different from today.
Very different. Well, that's a good place for me to jump in because having a baby in 2008, I did have a cell phone, of course. It was a small BlackBerry. So it was a smartphone, but I didn't get my first iPhone till 2010. So I wasn't doing anything photo based or really I wasn't doing much web stuff on my phone, even though it technically had that. I think I had it mostly to get work emails and it was so small and anyway, but blogs were definitely a thing in 2008. You had one. Well, I guess, I don't know. When did you start The Happiest Mom?
2009.
Yeah. So you had one where we're about to have one and there were many, many, many mom blogs. And I've talked on this show before how there were a lot of funny moms on Twitter. Twitter was a thing. Instagram was not a thing. Literally wasn't invented. Neither was Pinterest. Because I looked up these dates just for this episode because I wanted to be sure I was right. So Pinterest and Instagram both launched in 2010. Facebook, I think, is 2006. I got on in 2008. But it, as we all know, it was so different. It was very, very different then from what it is now. But yeah. I was on it. But blogs were a thing. And the ability to find good writing and good information and funny writing and just to be kind of informed and inspired was totally a thing when I had my first baby, whereas for you, it wasn't. So that's like, that is a pretty big shift. I wasn't consuming those blogs on my phone the way it would become a couple years later. So I guess I was sitting at my computer, I don't know, on maternity leave, I guess. I had like an old work laptop. I don't know. But a couple of other things that I mentioned or wanted to mention that were not a thing is Amazon Prime, like the ubiquitousness of having everything mm-hmm. to your doorstep in 1 or 2 days was not there. I guess Amazon Prime technically launched in 2005, but I don't remember people using it the way we use it now for everything. I don't think they had like every household item, everything that you would ever need. So we'd have to figure out when that happened, but I don't remember Prime being a thing for a few more years. So that's a big one. Cause if I had to go, I had to go to Babies R Us or Target if I needed stuff like that. So that's a pretty big shift that I think moms now just, you know, it's just, you just order it.
Right.
And then this idea of kind of styling your entire family. I think, I know we're going to talk about Instagram in particular, but that was not a thing, even though social media was, it was there and it was happening, but this kind of aesthetic around new motherhood and babies and families, the way it is now compared to 10 years ago is night and day. So I don't know. If you kind of remember that transition, but you were in the blogging world. So you would have had to remember when things were, like you said, anonymous and blog based, and then all of a sudden visual and kind of magazine style, almost like we've all got to look that
well,
way.
Well, we were in it. I was on, what's funny is in the late, the late aughts. Mm-hmm. So like 2005, six, I mean, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, I was blogging, but I didn't have, I wasn't like really running a blog of my own the way, I blogged at my own website and I contributed to other blogs. I had a blog for big families. It was very much text oriented. Mm-hmm. You put crappy pictures in there. A lot of people had them, but it still wasn't like, it wasn't a mass thing. Like nobody I knew in real life read blogs at all. I remember writing an article for American Baby Magazine about blogging. I was assigned the article in 2004. They did not run it until 2008. So I had to go back. I had to go back and like check to make sure all those people still had blogs and like that they wanted to be quoted still, that everything was still accurate. I think they must have decided it wasn't a thing enough to have it mm-hmm. be in the magazine. And they held it for 4 years, which was pretty funny. I got on Twitter in 2008. I was on Facebook in 2007 or 8, but like, yeah, I was sitting on my computer. I mean, all of my computers, this computer I have right now is the first one, I think, and I just got it, that won't have, first of all, dented edges, because you know how you'd be holding a computer and then your baby kicks and it flies off your lap. I had keys poked off because I had babies who, while they're nursing, would play with the keys or kick at it, but they would like slide their little fingers under the key and like mess with it. And they were gross. They were always sticky. Like they always had some kind of jelly or something. Cause I literally was on my computer with babies crawling all over me.
Yeah. And so for toddlers. for me, that would have been smartphones, just not the very, very beginning. Then I think I had neither. I mean, I would go and sit at the, table, but my laptop then was so big and clunky and it was a work laptop. I wouldn't have gone there. And then iPads came out and I remember thinking that the iPad was going to be kind of like my new mom buddy in the way that you used your computer, something lighter to read blogs and have on my lap. And then I think the phones got so much better quickly and the iPhone, I just thought, I don't need to hold an iPad in my lap. I've got a phone. So again, that 10 year difference is definitely where that is.
Well, and I remember before I had consistently had good laptops, I remember sitting at my desktop computer with 2, sometimes 3 nursing pillows stacked so that I could have good posture and nurse and be on my computer at the same time. And I got really good at like, you kind of had to have like one hand kind of slid under the pillow. Uh-huh.
I can picture
it. You can't go over the top, you know? You can have like one arm go around and that can be like your mousing hand and the other one can type. But like you have to have one hand that's like on the keyboard. And, you know, you got good at that. Like, you know, moms get good at finagling. And it's like a part of my muscle memory because I can remember how that felt to have to finagle to make the technology like fit into my life.
It's so funny.
But yes, your question was actually about like styling our lives.
Yeah.
And I would say that show started happening in earnest when you and I were working together on the blog.
So like 2012.
I would say 2012.
Yeah.
Suddenly there was this influx of people in this space who had really good cameras and knew how to use them. And they just had, even the blogging conferences I went to changed like really dramatically. I remember one year going to one that I'd always been sort of like an old, you know, like a, like an old sage or something at, well, not even old sage at that time. I was like young and part of the kind of up and coming crowd. And then one year I'm like, oh my gosh, how come everybody is 7 years younger than me and
looks
very
like
business oriented and they all look like models. It was a very different thing. And it became very businessy and very savvy in a way that I was not like prepared for, really. So what's cool about that is it made us all have better, like fun, great, beautiful content to look at, which I think is great. The downside of that is then now everyone's got Instagram, everyone's got, you know, not blogs necessarily, but everyone's got a Facebook page. And now we all feel like our feeds have to resemble those very curated. Like no one used to think that your blog had to look like Better Homes and Gardens.
Right.
Like, it just wasn't even a thing. But now there's this weird mix. There's this weird blurring of the lines between normal person and
influencer.
And everybody thinks of themselves as an influencer, whether they know they're thinking that or not. They're trying to not just aspire to that life, but also the representation of that life.
Yes.
So it raises the bar.
It does. And there have been some really good conversations on this podcast, both with guests that we've had on and various times where we've talked about it, where we talk about it is really gray, murky area, because on the one hand, you know, you want to be a voice of positivity online. You and I both have like our Instagram. We have Instagram for the Mom Hour, and you want to put out good, nice, well-curated content. That's part of our role as professionals, as influencers. But at the same time, like there is this backlash against anything that's not quote unquote real. So we also need to keep it real. But what does that mean? And where is the privacy line? Like it is something we think about that I don't think anybody had to think about 10 years ago. And that includes whether you're a content creator or not, you know, the thought of like, how will this be perceived? What am I putting out there? And some people are maybe approaching it from like wanting to look perfect all the time, but other people are approaching it like maybe not wanting to look perfect all the time and wanting to be real, but no matter what, everyone's thinking about it, I think.
Yeah, no, I totally think you're right. And I know, I remember for me, there was a push pull when I was blogging in 29, you know, or 2009 through, what is it, 2015? That we kind of shut down the happiest home. In that I didn't write a lot about my kids specifically, like their lives weren't the focus, almost feeling this uncomfortable sense, like this has a shelf life because what people want are stories about families and they want to follow, they want my kids to be characters in this. And that was never what I, at least not with that blog, that wasn't what I did.
Right.
So it was kind of like at that point, especially, but I think it's now it's just gone more visual. In those days, it was more writing focused. People were really writing a lot about their kids to the point where people felt like they knew their kids.
Yeah.
Like people on the outside felt like they knew these bloggers' children. And I just didn't do that. And so there was some that actually, I think in a way was limiting, but that's okay. Like I was a choice I made, and maybe I don't even know that I made that choice consciously. I think for me, it just made it easier to keep a little privacy for me.
Right.
But it's just interesting now to look and see, especially all these years later, some of those old school bloggers are still going.
Yep.
And their kids, you know, have been known this whole time.
Yep. It's
fascinating.
Yeah, that is fascinating. And also fascinating to think about. If you're a new mom in 2018, and let's say you got on Instagram around when it launched, that's 8 years of your adult life where you've been consuming content before becoming a mom. So there's like this whole, whereas like for you and I, those platforms developed after we had kids and we had to figure out how that worked in. Whereas now it's so native. I don't know. It's just interesting. Well, a couple more things that I think are worth mentioning that have changed a lot, in my opinion. One is this like ability to have information on demand, like about anything. It could be a recipe on demand or information. I think pediatricians even now have like web portals where you can go in and post a question, and like just the urgency to have questions answered. I think, well, there's two sides. I think one, the access to information is always a good thing. I mean, I think it's a good thing if we can get good information in the quickest way possible. But I do also think it's created like almost a frenzy of, I don't know, Googling stuff and expecting. Yeah. And then it puts the onus on us to be like the curators of that information and decide what's what. So I'm curious if you have any thoughts on like your very first, like, say, pediatrician information or medical information for your baby. You would have had to look in a book or call the doctor, right?
Yeah. The thing that I think is a little different about that is that by the time my third came out, say, my third came out of my body, by the time my third baby came out.
His release date.
Yeah, his release date was 2003. And by that point, you know, there was WebMD, I'm pretty sure. If not, there was everything else. I mean, there was only really Jacob came out in a time when I couldn't at least look up rudimentary information. Now, what I didn't have was contact. I couldn't contact a doctor. Right. I couldn't easily online contact a lactation consultant, say something like that. So in some ways, I think that that was limiting. Like there, I think there's ways that it would have been really great for me to be able to make actual contact with people. But the information, it was there. You just, there wasn't as much of it. And you had to be savvier about search, because search sucked back then. You know, there was like four or five search engines and they weren't very intuitive. But that's okay, because it was also coincided with the time of my life that I was most motivated to search and the most like willing to dig in and really, really do the research. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure how different that is. I do know what led. I laugh about this with my friends all the time. Like, you know, should we wait and see if we could figure this out, or should we just look it up?
Right.
Like,
yes.
How much do we want to know this thing? Over the summer, Jen and I were going into the woods with the boys, and like as we were leaving cell, like we had like our last bar of cell phone coverage. We got in this conversation about some soap opera from like the 90s. And we couldn't remember like what this woman's name was. And so I'm looking it up and I said, you do realize we're using our last our last bars of internet for 2 days to look up this person. This is not going to change our lives. And if we get eaten by bears, this is the last thing that's going to be on my phone. When they find my phone and try to find evidence of like how we spent, you know, they're going to find us looking up this C-list actor. So anyway, it was just, I think that that's changed. I don't know that that's as big of a change for motherhood for me, but maybe, I don't know. What about you?
No. So I think you're right. I think the Googling has been there for a long time. I think maybe where I was headed, and this was my next point, was like the expectation that you have access to kind of like professional help in all areas. Yeah. Like I'm thinking about, like you said, like immediate chat with a lactation consultant is a great example. Things I'm seeing now is like sleep training and a sleep coach, like the prevalence of people who are available to come in a professional capacity and help you as a new mom. I'm going to come down neutral on this. I think in a lot of situations, this is a godsend, right? Like, and so this is nothing against the sleep coaches out there or anybody who's sought out a sleep coach. However, I think the expectations have shifted to where now there's a solution out there or something you can buy or pay for or sign up for everything. And I'm not sure that the abundance of that is like, I almost feel like it's gone so far. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if it's totally the part of me that likes to solve my own problems. Like I am like a really resourceful person. So part of me is like, do we need like another boot camp or another email sign up or another app? Or could we just like go with our gut and try and figure it out and see what happens? It's the urgency to solve a problem that I feel like is at a high right now.
That, and I think the number of experts, and I'm going to put that in quotes, that are now taking advantage of, and I don't mean that in a bad way necessarily, you know, but exploiting that rush to have your problems be immediately solved, I think can open people up to, again, I don't want to say being taken advantage of, that's not right, because I know that there's a lot of, I mean, I've done coaching and we both have services that we recommend that we think are great that do this, like that connect you with those people automatically. But like, I just think that it's just very possible to spend a lot of your money and time trying to get someone to walk you through something that maybe you don't need them to walk you through.
Or to solve a problem that is like a regular part of life. Yeah. Right. I don't know. Maybe this is like, maybe we're being crotchety here, but
maybe. Well, and I don't think it's all good or all bad. Right.
Right. So no, like, I agree.
You know, I think that there's ways that being able to access a professional right away is great.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. Sometimes you don't need an expert right then.
Right. Exactly. Yes. So yeah. Well said. Okay, well, should we take a sponsor break and then move on? Why don't you set up our first sponsor?
Well, here's something we did not have
right
when I was first a mom, and that is HelloFresh. And I'm very glad that we do now, because HelloFresh is a meal kit delivery service that shops, plans, and delivers step-by-step recipes and pre-measured ingredients. So you don't have to spend all that time planning your meals or shopping. You can just cook and enjoy the fresh meals that are delivered to your door, ready to put together. I love that it comes to your door in insulated packaging, so you don't have to be home when the food is delivered, which is a treat for those crazy days when you don't really want to have to think about food or cooking. You just want, you know, someone else to do the work and tell you what you're going to be eating. I also love that it gives you a chance to cook a little outside your comfort zone, or just shake up a classic recipe, like something you make all the time, but maybe you'd like to make it a, you know, give it a little more oomph. For example, their creamy dill chicken with roasted potatoes and green beans is just kind of like a slightly elevated version of what I might make my kids anyway without thinking about it. It's familiar enough, my kids will still eat it, but it also gives me some new flavors to play around with and can inspire new meals. Actually, the recipes are so simple and outlined so well on the instruction cards that my older kids sometimes cook the meals, which is a total bonus. And we are offering a great deal, $20 off your first three boxes for a total of $60 off. Just visit HelloFresh.com/MomHour60 and enter MomHour60 at checkout. Again, visit HelloFresh.com/MomHour60 and enter MomHour60 when you check out. That's like receiving six meals free. So that's a really good deal.
That is a really good deal. Okay, I'm going to talk about sport coops. And I need to tell you that the sports in this house are getting more expensive.
Yeah. And guess what? That doesn't stop when they get older, because they need bigger uniforms. Their equipment gets more complicated. They start traveling more. And, you know, I'm kind of grumpy about fundraisers when they take a big chunk of the profits for your kids to go door to door, or you have to, like, you know, hassle your coworkers to buy stuff. And you don't know if anybody actually wants or will use that stuff.
Totally. And these people want to support your kids. They may not want that bag of popcorn or whatever. So yeah. We are partnering with Sport Coops. That's coops as in coupons. And it's an easy way for athletes and their parents to raise money for things like equipment, team fees, and travel expenses, or really any expenses related to their sport. And it all happens from your phone, which, as we've been discussing, is a thing now, and we could do all this from our phones. So I recently set up a Sport Coops fundraiser page for Allegra, because she's going to be taking her Taekwondo black belt test in the spring, and there's quite a few expenses that go along with that, and it was really easy.
And here's the coops part. Okay, so as soon as your friends and family donate, they get instant access to all kinds of coupons, and they're really good coupons. So things your friends and relatives are going to be excited to use, like discounts to sporting goods stores, department stores, food, card, hotel rentals, and more.
Yep. So whether you are saving for soccer camp or hockey equipment, this is a great option. It saves you time and hassle, and it allows your kids' biggest fans to support them directly, again, without necessarily buying stuff from the catalog. So look for Sport Coops as an app on iOS or Google Play. And if your kids aren't sports aged yet, you can also tell other athletes in your life, like your nieces and nephews, to download the app, and it makes it easy for you to support them.
Again, that's Sport Coops, C-O-U-P-S, like coupons, and you can find it in Google Play or on the iOS App Store.
Awesome. Okay, so I think it would be helpful here to kind of zoom back out and talk about, why does any of this matter? I mean, we have listeners out there who are brand new moms, and I'm kind of thinking, like, what things are going to be different? What things are they going to look back on and say that changed? And what does it even matter? Like, what's the point? Do you have any thoughts on that?
You know what's funny? Like, I have been thinking about this because, like, when I became a mom, my sister was probably my most closest parenting role model. She was 10 years older than me and had been a mom for, maybe like 7 or 8 years by that point. No. Yeah. 7 or 8 years by that point. So she already was like on the cusp of doing things outside of the trend on some ends and coming into the, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. She was a little ahead of the trends in some places, a little behind mm-hmm. in others, which meant that I was kind of ahead, but like on different things, because everything flip-flops.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about stuff. We talked about stuff, and that's, stuff is just one thing. Like, stuff is just the what we're surrounded by. But I mean, like, attitudes. And we talk about this a lot, Sarah, about how, you know, whether it comes to how we handle medical issues or feeding or whatever the topic du jour is, birth, all those things, mm-hmm. there's a circle and there's a cycle. Everything changes and it keeps moving forward. Like, we're never going to go back to kids like crawling around the front seat without a car seat. Right. And we're never going to go back, I don't think, to like twilight sleep.
Right.
But like those things, we keep like moving, we inch forward, but it's still like a circle inching forward and things come into vogue and go out of vogue. Mm-hmm. So I guess I would just say that there's a place for looking at what the latest research mm-hmm. says, but try to keep it in perspective and in context. Mm-hmm. Try to understand that public health is one thing, mm-hmm. and that's not necessarily like what's happening and our public, or I guess not even public health isn't the right word, but like there's what's good for the world and it, as a whole, mm-hmm. and then there's what's good for your family, mm-hmm. and those two things might not always
mm-hmm. I like that
completely like mm-hmm. mesh at any given time. And then also, like, things are just going to keep changing.
Well, and I think it gives moms permission to, number one, permission to like feel ambivalent about current trends. Like, it's okay not to be sure about whatever mm-hmm. you're unsure about, but it also gives moms, I think, like permission to give our own moms credit for what they did. They did the best with what they had. And like, no one needs to hold on so tightly to the quote unquote right way that we're doing things right now. And that's like, it's kind of a recipe for unhappiness anyway. We've talked about that a million times, but I think having this like quote unquote historical perspective really helps, because we can see that like 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 40 years ago, people were doing the best with the information they have, and that you're doing the same thing right now. You just don't have that benefit of perspective, hindsight.
And if you're doing something that seems a little fringy right now, or you're not seeing a lot of support for it, just wait 10 years. Yeah. That is going to change. I mean, I always laugh when I think about the way things have changed about how babies are fed, for example.
Yeah, you've said that about baby-led weaning, that like now it's a thing where you were like,
it's a thing. And when I was doing it, like it was weird. And so uh-huh. like things like that, or like, I remember like moms really having a tough time if they were trying to find foods that were gluten-free or nut-free. I mean, can you imagine now having having anyone give you a hard time about gluten-free? It's everywhere.
Yeah.
But 15 years ago, it was a thing. People needed it. People were looking for it, but it was seen as kind of fringy. So those things are always going to continue to change. And that might not help you right now if you're struggling with feeling like a little bit of a weirdo, because you either have a special need or you do things differently. But I mean, it does kind of feel like some kind of smug validation later.
Yeah. And maybe it does. Maybe it helps somebody who has felt judgmental of people on the fringe. And maybe it helps open your eyes a little bit to like, we don't know what is going to come down the pike. So I thought I would ask you, since you're at this 21 year mark, do you have any thoughts about things that are going to change going forward, that like places where we are now that you see evolving?
Yeah. I mean, I look back with a lot of fondness actually for those forum days and this is even predating blog comment sections, but like truly forums where people got to know each other under a handle, and mm-hmm. people were very private about the way they raised their kids. And I don't mean private in like hide the bad stuff kind of way, or be afraid to talk about things publicly, but like we were talking about with this, everyone's an influencer, everyone's mm-hmm. a brand, everyone has to be so out there about parenting, and not everybody wants to be. Mm-hmm. And even those who want to be like, say you want to be sometimes, but you don't want to be all the time, or like you want to share some pictures, but you don't want to share all the pictures. And I think I'm hoping that in general, that the internet might become a little less centralized again, mm-hmm. and like less focused on Facebook mm-hmm. or Instagram, or like these major platforms where like where you're putting yourself out there so publicly, and might start kind of forming again around really specific tribes and interests. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be a really good thing, actually. I also, one other thing that I was thinking about, again, kind of this idea of everything becoming like the universe expanding and then maybe retracting a little bit again, is with all these products and brands, I think it's awesome how much more choice there is these days, but I think that it can become really overwhelming mm-hmm. and it can add pressure. Like we were talking about, if you can coordinate your baby's nursery to the stroller and the car seat and the wardrobe, and why wouldn't you do that? Right.
But
if you only have four brands to choose from and everyone else around you is kind of choosing from those same four brands, it does add like a simplicity.
Yep.
Everything doesn't have to be a personal extension of your style, including your baby necessarily.
Yeah.
And I would love to see that ease up a bit.
Yeah, I would as well. That's so interesting. What I made a note of is kind of similar, but it was actually more about our kids. And I am kind of hoping that the way, you know, you've had teenagers for a while now and seen how kids are online. And I have only, I only know what I read from moms like you and kind of what I pick up. But I have sort of been watching and waiting and hoping for the way that our kids deal with being public on the internet, for that to, what am I trying to say? Like, not catch up. I mean, we'll never catch up because technology is always farther ahead than we are socially. But for there to be a kind of foundational understanding of what it means to be public online, what the repercussions of that are, what the tools kids need to interact with each other online as well as interact in person. Mm-hmm. That's like a topic I find really interesting. And I'm hopeful that the adults of my generation and your generation, and even a little older than us, are, their knowledge is catching up so that we can kind of like be in that world with our kids and support them. Did that make sense at all?
Totally.
I think there was a generation of kids who got online before any adults knew how to support them. And what I'm hoping is that parents like me, who now have 10-year-olds and have, you know, I've been on the internet for 20 years, that I will be a better support than maybe a generation ago parents were able to be. And that the norms around internet use and internet sharing and privacy will have caught up a little bit. I don't know. Is that too hopeful?
I totally. Well, here's the thing. You know what I think is going to change? I have been reading a lot lately about technology and Silicon Valley and just kind of how this whole tech boom has, like, the direction it's gone in.
Yeah.
And I am hopeful that kids, like the young people today, are going to, instead of focusing on how to make the most amount of money they possibly can with technology, are going to take all this brain trust and these smarts and this incredible vast knowledge that we have access to and capabilities that we that are amazing, and use it to, like, do some good. Like, I would really like to see that, because I feel like at first it was like, oh, like, we can do this, so let's do it, and then let's find a way to monetize everything, and then let's make everything make people super rich. And I'm hopeful that, like, the same kids who are making real change happen, you know, like the kids in Florida last year with the school shootings and all that. Like, I feel like those kind of kids are going to come up and do something different. I don't know that it's going to be the adults now doing it.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be the kids that are going
to
do it.
Yeah. No, I love that. I think that is an uplifting way to look at it.
And but then, they're smart, so they can.
And then related to that is I'm just seeing a lot of, like, cultural anxiety the last few years, you know, politically, environmentally, like, you know, it's just out there. But I think if there's an upside to that, I also see more adults kind of taking charge of their own mental health and the importance of maternal mental health, postpartum mental health, kids and mental health. And I do think that hopefully we're swinging to a place where kids are going to see, have examples of adults taking care of themselves and maybe less stigma around certain mental health issues. And I don't know.
Yeah.
So I think that's that would be a welcome shift too, I think.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. I love it.
All right. Well, you guys are going to hear my chat with my mom, some snippets of her wisdom. Megan, anything else? You heard it before we started recording this. You want to set
it
up?
No, it's just fascinating
because
I think it just shows you how things are just going to continue.
Yep. It is. Yeah. Okay. And so before we wrap up real quick, I want to let you guys know that this Friday we have another special holiday bonus episode. So look for that. We're going to be talking about setting intentions for our December this year. And then also, if you missed it on Instagram, I will link up a super cute video of my kids making snow. So you have real snow.
It's so cute.
We got Insta snow with our partnership with Spangler Science Club. So I will link that up in the show notes. And if you're looking for great gift ideas for kids like 5 to 12 ages, check out that video and check out our sponsor, Spangler Science Club. All right. Do you remember what you were told about starting solids and then, like, food and stuff?
First of all, with the nursing, we were told every 4 hours. Okay. Try to keep it to 4 hours. If you have to go 3 hours and then you can nurse. But there was a lot of anxiety for me around that. That was unnecessary stress, but it came from not knowing, you know, that was the advice of the day, is to wait 3 to 4 hours. Otherwise you're going to be what they say, you're going to be nursing all the time. So you don't want that. So that's what we got. But then I was told 6 months, you could be done nursing at 6 months. And that's what I did with you. So, and then baby food was big. First cereal, as I remember, and then, you know, work into the other foods, but it was definitely baby food. It was the organic baby food, I don't think existed.
Okay, so let's switch gears. Can you think of another, I mean, everything, sleep, napping, cars?
The other thing that came to mind is the stuff. we had very limited choices of what to buy for your baby. One of the things we had, which I don't see anymore, is playpens. Playpens mm-hmm. were part of raising your baby. It was a place to put them so they didn't get in, you know, yeah. into trouble when you were busy. So yeah. it was thought of as a safety thing, but it was a play place too. You had toys and, yeah. and I don't see that as much.
Were they like bigger than the pack and plays that we have?
They were bigger and they were flat on the floor. Then I actually do think they got the playpens got more like a pack and play, but low to the ground mm-hmm. with the kind of netting.
Yeah.
I think that's what we had. So that was one of the things that I think was an important part. You always had a playpen. And now
yeah, I feel like maybe we should bring that back.
Yeah, it is kind of nice to have a place to have them know they're safe while you run to the bathroom or you're, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And I do think the stuff that is so much more available is it's not really like it's going overboard. It's just not necessary. You don't have to have them right. to raise your baby. They are nice right. to have. This is a different section, but it was something that was important to me or that I've seen a difference is, and we've talked about it, is the access to information, access to support.
Yeah.
As a mother.
So what was that like?
Well, for me, and you know, I would say I was pretty progressive. I tried to find out the latest and the greatest and all of that. I had one little, it was almost pamphlet size, but it was a little tiny book publication that came out once a month and it was called yeah. Welcome Home. And I just waited for that thing to come every month because it was so supportive and it gave, you know, encouragement, information, even some poetry, you know, something that was a supportive thing for mom. And now it gratefully for this generation, there is so much good information out there and
yeah.
so much support for moms that maybe don't have, you know, they're where they can't go out much or
right.
maybe they've moved or they don't have a good network of friends and friends were, you know, you're all at the same point. So
yeah.
having that. So I think that that's one of the things that's really a wonderful thing for this generation of moms. And to go with that, I was going to say that I also think back when you guys were tiny, I think the awareness that we need that was coming out.
Yeah.
Where before, raising kids was a very private thing. And if you had trouble with your kids, it was a very private thing. You didn't talk about it. And I think that I was kind of at the beginning of the understanding that it's not so easy and we don't
yeah.
all have the answers and we shouldn't have all the answers and we need a network. And now it seems like we're reaching out, women are reaching out more outside of their families for information, to give support, all of that. But I think that I do feel like that was a time of a little bit of opening up.
Last question is, can you be the voice of grandma then and say like, what would be the biggest differences from when you like 1950s, when you were born, anything that comes, I mean, like the obvious one is like sliding around in the backseat of a car. Like, no, you know, didn't she
right.
hold babies? Like she held babies while she drove. Right.
I think what she meant, and I think I remember this, is a 1-year-old or 2-year-old would stand behind her on the seat. We had bench seats, so it was a way that it
roll
around.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
But you know, I mean, I remember a couple I remember one in particular where I went rolling and, you know, cut my eye and, you know, it was an active place in that car.
But the other part of it too is that the good side of that, if you want to call it a good side, was
we had so much fun in the car. I mean, we would be on the floor in the back, playing, you know, on the floor right
yeah.
behind the driver's seat and, you know, forts. And when we went to grandma and grandpa's in, you know, up by Seattle, it was quite a long ride then. The roads were not quite as good. So it was a longer ride. It was like 6 or 8 hours, but we would be in the back seat with sleeping bags, having the best time. It wasn't like you just sat in your car seat. You were playing. It was
yeah.
like a playground back there.
That's so funny. Well, and then
I
you
know.
Just think, and you've lived to tell the tale.
And we lived to tell it.